Hello, and welcome to the Simple Faith Podcast from the Faith Formation for Children and Youth Department at St. Catherine of Siena Church in Austin, Texas. Our goal is to offer short and simple thoughts and reflections as part of our Faith Formation program. We hope you will find them helpful. This year's theme is Living Leisurely Through the Liturgical Year, and the title of today's podcast is The Baptism of Jesus and Catholic Revolutionary Change. Over the last few weeks, we have celebrated important moments in the life of Jesus: Christmas, the visit from the wise men, and the baptism of the Lord. Christmas celebrates the coming of God into our world in human form. The visit from the wise men, or celebration of Epiphany, celebrates God breaking into our lives and our realization of it. The baptism of the Lord celebrates, well, the baptism of Jesus. Maybe we put out a cute little nativity scene or wore a Jesus is the reason for the season t-shirt. Perhaps we celebrated the Feast of the Epiphany with gifts or a king cake. We lit some incense and blessed the doorways in our homes with the initials of the three wise men. These are all lovely ways to bring the symbols, blessings, and faith of Catholicism into our homes, especially as we try to share them with our children. As adults, though, we are called to more. Much more. Let's consider the baptism of Jesus. When most of us think baptism, we think of babies in white dresses, little crucifix necklaces, holy water, godparents, candles, and cake. However, infant baptism didn't come along in the Catholic Church until several decades after Jesus. It was a theology and a practice that evolved in the life of the Church. Back in the time of Jesus, ceremonial washings such as baptism were for adults who wanted to make a significant change in their lives. It was for people who wanted to turn toward God or even return to God. That's one thing that made Jesus' baptism so confounding for those who witnessed or heard about it later. Jesus was God. Jesus was without sin. He didn't need to turn back to God because Jesus had never turned away from God. The baptism of Jesus, as told in Scripture, was different. It was a revelatory event. That means it was meant to reveal to us something about who Jesus was and what he was about. First, it revealed to us that Jesus was the Son of God. When Jesus came up out of the water, the sky opened and the voice of God said, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." The second result of Jesus' baptism was that it was the start of his public ministry. After Jesus' baptism, he set out to the surrounding areas and started preaching and teaching, healing and feeding, serving and loving the lost, the forgotten, and the outcast. However, in all three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, something else important happens between the time of Jesus' baptism and his launching off into public ministry. Jesus goes on retreat. Sort of. Jesus spends 40 days in the desert. The Gospel of Mark says the Spirit drove him out into the desert, while Matthew and Luke say Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert. In all three, though, Jesus spent 40 days in the desert. But why? Perhaps upon hearing he was the beloved Son of God, he needed a little time to collect his thoughts and get his act together before heading out to ministry. Scripture says he spent 40 days in prayer and fasting, depending upon God for his spiritual and physical needs. In Scripture, the use of the number 40 is always a sign. There were 40 days and 40 nights of rain for Noah, 40 years in the desert for the Israelites, and in the Acts of the Apostles, we are told there were 40 days between the resurrection of Jesus and his ascension into heaven. 40 in Scripture means a long time. And it symbolizes a time when God is up to something. It's a time of transition, of process, interior change and conversion, a time to find and follow God on a journey of transformation. Those 40 days Jesus spent in the desert between the time of hearing he was the beloved Son of God and the beginning of his public ministry were a time for Jesus to truly get to know who he was and who he was not. For while Jesus was the beloved Son of God, he absolutely was not called to embrace economic or worldly power, possessions, and status and wield it over humanity. Jesus was given the opportunity to sell his soul to Satan for the chance to be more powerful than the God who had sent him, and Jesus refused. In our country, it seems we have witnessed months and years of a national identity many have tried to bend to one of national power, righteousness, and self-sufficiency. It is based upon a belief held by many that we can go it alone and do it all ourselves. Add to it the idea that some people should have power, jobs, food, security, health, status, and others should not. Mix that with the concept of a meritocracy, some classism, and a national original sin of racism, and we have a powder keg. The match of a pandemic lit the fuse. Here we are, just a few weeks into the new year, and we have literally and violently turned against ourselves as a community. Rather than celebrating all we hold to be good, we just last week had a nation on lockdown, anticipating violent action in all 50 states. Last Friday's gospel reading was from Mark. It was the story of the paralyzed man who was unable to get into the house where Jesus was preaching, so his friends lowered him through the roof on his mat for Jesus to heal him. While stories in scripture are rarely one-dimensional, this one is no exception. On the surface, this is a story about how the man's faith in Jesus saved and healed him, and it is cause for celebration. However, there's more to the story. Besides healing the paralyzed man, Jesus' actions revealed what was really in the hearts of the religious leaders. They did not rejoice when the man was healed. Rather, they criticized Jesus for telling him his sins were forgiven. Is it possible these scribes and leaders were jealous and angry that the paralyzed man got something they didn't? We can imagine what might have been in their hearts and minds. What? That paralyzed man who sits around all day doing nothing, earning nothing, and not proving how good and religious he was, whose parents were probably sinners, got healed and forgiven by God? After all we've done to prove ourselves better than everyone else, he cut to the front of the line. We are the true children of Israel, not him. So now let's put it in today's terms. What? Those poor, uneducated, undocumented immigrants get free food and housing? I went to college and I work all day. They shouldn't get anything for free. What about those people of color? They make me nervous, so I want the police to defend me. What? Those non-Christians from another country aren't real Americans? They shouldn't get to have any say about anything in this country. It's difficult not to believe this is what's going on in our country right now. We've been convinced that we are beloved, chosen sons and daughters of God, so we should get to do what we want. And we get upset when God's plans turn out differently. And they almost always do. We might even try to hide our entitlement and anger under a mantle of religiosity or piety. Maybe we convince ourselves that it's okay to be anti-immigrant or anti-healthcare for the poor because we're pro-life. A few months ago, Pope Francis wrote an editorial in the New York Times. In it he said, "The pandemic has exposed the paradox that while we are more connected, we are also more divided. Our fears are exacerbated and exploited by a certain kind of populist politics that seeks power over society. It is hard to build a culture of encounter in which we meet as people with a shared dignity, within a throwaway culture that regards the well-being of the elderly, the unemployed, the disabled, and the unborn as peripheral to our own well-being. To come out of this crisis better, we have to recover the knowledge that as a people, we have a shared destination. The pandemic has reminded us that no one is saved alone." And what happened? Instead of celebrating Pope Francis's championing of human solidarity, many, many people, Catholics included, decried him for being a socialist. The funny thing, though, is that he was following over 100 years of papal tradition and teaching on the preferential option for the poor and the common good. When did some of these radical papal ideas start? In 1891, with Pope Leo XIII's document, Rerum Novarum, which means in English, believe it or not, revolutionary change. In that document, Pope Leo XIII championed the rights of the working class and condemned socialism. From Jesus' healing and forgiving of those who in our eyes may not deserve it, to Pope Leo XIII championing workers, to Pope Francis calling us to global human solidarity, it is all in line with Catholic teaching. In the next few weeks, we will begin the 40 days of Lent. There's that 40 again. Even though we just put away our nativity sets and the chalk of Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar is still fresh and dark on our lintels, we should all undertake the transformative journey of Lent. Maybe it's time to search the internet for some of those papal documents and educate ourselves on where the Church really stands, with Jesus and among the poor, immigrant, broken, sick, and marginalized. It's also time to stand strong and honestly challenge the demons that confront us. Like Jesus in the desert after his baptism, we too are tempted to crave money, status, possessions, and power. Fortunately, we have the grace of our baptisms to help us through. Just as Jesus was baptized by being fully submerged in water, so too are adults who are baptized into the Catholic Church at Easter. Their old selves and sins are drowned, and they rise again reborn from the water of the font. These times also call for real change. 40 days in the desert's worth, and it's possible only prayer, fasting, and the grace of God will give us the strength and courage to embrace that change, to speak up for it. We are the ones called to birth the love of Christ in the world, the ones called to recognize him in the poor and lay our gifts at his feet, the ones who, like Jesus, have been baptized and sent out on mission for the life of the whole world.